when the Rocky Mountain News went out of business. And when I started at the Denver Post 16 years ago, legitimately, there were almost 300 journalists in the newsroom. And of course, that's copy editors and artists, reporters and editors. But now we're talking between 60 and 70 journalists. So the staff has been cut by 4/5 in the last 15 plus years.
And they would cut 30 from that?
No, that includes the 30. So they were about 90 to 100, and now they're about 60 to 70.
Well, I wanted to go to the lead editorial in Denver Post package, blasting the paper's hedge fund owner, Alden Global Capital. The editorial board displayed a striking interactive photo showing the toll staff cuts have taken on the newsroom. If you slide the bar to the right, you see a photo taken in May 2013 in which 142 staffers had gathered to celebrate winning a staff Pulitzer Prize. When you slide the bar to the left, however, you see the same picture dated April 2018, showing the staffers who are now gone, more than half rendered in black. Ricardo Bacco, what are you calling for? What is the staff? I mean, you wrote about how you thought it was odd that you as reporters would go outside the paper and actually protest and hold up banners, the kind of thing you were covering years ago with other people and other groups.
It's so true. You know, I remember that day in 2013 after the Pulitzer, when we went downstairs to the lobby to shoot that picture. And that picture has been hanging in the newsroom ever since as a very stark and real reminder of what's been happening since then. And then, yeah, 2 years ago, 2016, us reporters, many editors and other journalistic staff did take to the streets. We protested on the steps of the newsroom, which was historic in and of itself. You know, journalists, this is not what we are taught to do in J school. This is not what we're supposed to do, but we felt like we didn't even have a choice. And so I think the 2018 now, this most recent cut and this perspective section dedicated to the subject matter speaks to the desperate times, desperate measures the staff and us former staffers are willing to take. It's just, this is heartbreaking for Denver. This is awful news for Colorado. The only good news, this is good news only to crooked CEOs and bad news politicians who don't want that oversight happening, frankly, at the state legislature or in boardrooms across
Ricardo,
the state.
If we can, just speaking about crooked CEOs, one of the interesting things about this particular tragedy is that the paper, according to the hedge fund that owns you, was making money, but that basically we're talking about the second largest newspaper chain in America right now after Gannett. And apparently they're using these newspapers as cash cows to invest in other businesses. Could you talk about that?
That's exactly what's happening. You know, there have been multiple published reports saying the Denver Post alone is making a very healthy profit. We also know this because when I was still at the newspaper in 2016, we got a note from our president at the time, the president of Digital First Media, saying we're profitable, we're doing better than our competitors. And we knew that wasn't going to stop the hemorrhagings because that's only continued since then. And we knew it was bad news for us from the start. So I think this is just where we are. It's a dire place to be. And I think as journalists, because we're not taught to organize, because we're taught to kind of stay in the background and keep a non-public presence, this was the only thing we knew how to do. We didn't know how to organize, but we know how to write and put together a section. And I couldn't be prouder of Denver Post editorial page editor Chuck Plunkett for doing what he did this last Sunday.
Ricardo Bacco, we want to ask you to stay for part two. We'll post it as a web exclusive at democracynow.org to talk about Alden's owners and to talk about how important local media is in journalism across the country. Ricardo Bacco is now CEO and founder of Grasslands. He was the cannabis editor for the Denver Post when he resigned in 2016 after 16 years. We'll link to your piece. When a hedge fund tries to kill the newspapers it owns, journalists must fight back. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Accepting applications for a paid year-long social media fellowship. Check it out at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Gonzalez. Happy birthday, David Brood.
Angry at the high cost of tuition and decreases in money for quality education? So are many students and parents, but there is something we can do. Register, vote, and volunteer to register others for the upcoming election. We can make a difference. For more information, call NYPIRG's Youth Vote Campaign at 632-6457. That's 632-6457 and online at NYPIRG.org. That's NYPIRG.org.
Do you like to savor a cup of Java in the morning? I know I do. And we're definitely not alone. New Yorkers love their coffee and drink lots of it. With that in mind, just imagine the amount of trash that's created every day by people using disposable coffee cups. There's a better alternative, you know. By using a reusable coffee mug, you can save natural resources, landfill space, and money too. It's called reuse, and it's even better than recycling. So remember, using it once is not enough. Choose to reuse.
And if you have chosen to stay with WUSB Stony Brook, you will be listening to Off the Wall for the next hour here on 90.1 and 107.3. the very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. It's Emmanuel Goldstein here with you tonight, joined by... Where's Kyle? Kyle? Kyle's not here. Where's Kyle? Huh. Oh, wait. It's coming back to me. Yeah, I've been very busy, okay? So I lose track of things. But yeah, I drove Kyle to the airport last week. Yeah, I remember that. Wow, that was something. That was something else. You know what happened? We had to drive to Newark, New Jersey. For some reason, the flight was leaving out of Newark, New Jersey. You know, we have three airports here. Why pick the one that's close? Actually, we have four airports, if you count MacArthur. And that's right down the road. But no, we had to go to Newark, New Jersey. And got this neat little GPS device in the car. Actually, no, it's a neat little GPS device on my phone. You know, not the one that the idiot bus driver used the other day when he crashed into the bridge. Although, technically, he may not be that much of an idiot because those commercial regulations are something that most other states don't have. This is something unique to New York. In case you ever come here and you're driving a commercial vehicle, there are certain roads you can't go on. They're called parkways. Now, in other states, you can go on the parkway with a truck or a bus, but in New York, you can't do that. All right, it's just not something that's encouraged, and it's in fact emphasized by the fact that you'll smack into a bridge if your vehicle's too tall. And this poor guy didn't know that. The worst part about it was he was bringing home all these kids who had been to Europe for some kind of exchange program, and this was the final leg of the trip. And fortunately, nobody was killed. People were injured. The guy was using a GPS system, but that was not meant for commercial vehicles. And, you know, sometimes when I'm driving a commercial vehicle, I have done that on occasion. It might be a tiny thing like the 2600 van, or it might be a big Ryder truck, or who knows. There are certain roads you can't take. You can't take the Northern State Parkway, even though there are SUVs that are bigger than the vehicle you're driving because you have commercial plates. You're not allowed on that road. But the GPS systems, such as Waze, don't know that, and they don't tell you, and they keep directing you onto roads you're not allowed to be on. So, you know, if you're using that kind of a system and you're driving a semi, not a good idea in Long Island or other parts of New York State. And this is something that is fairly unique to this area. So if you're from other parts of the country or the world, you might find it unusual. But best that you know it now before you wind up smacking into a bridge. Okay, so we were using a GPS system. I'll just say it. We were using Waze, and Waze has usually been pretty good for the most part when you're driving a car. You know, as far as getting you around traffic situations and making sure that you arrive at the time that they initially say you're going to arrive. So we were driving. It was, you know, mid-afternoon, early afternoon, not quite, you know, getting to rush hour, but sort of, you know, flirting with it a little bit. And, you know, it's everything seemed fine. Everything seemed just great. You know, we were going to go and get there about an hour and a half before the flight. And we were heading up to the Norton State Parkway, all right? We'd come from the South Shore. We headed up to the Norton State Parkway. And then we were heading up on the, I think we turned on the Cross Island. And I figured, yeah, okay, so we're going to go across the Whitestone or the Throg's Neck and take the Cross Bronx, which technically is the worst road in the world. But at that time of day, I might be able to make a beeline for the GW Bridge. Not a problem. Okay, I see what Waze is doing here. But no. What happened was Waze said, no, go on the Long Island Expressway instead. The Long Island Expressway? Really? Okay, so what? We're gonna take the Triborough? What are you thinking here? You're going to actually take the Midtown Tunnel and then cut through Manhattan? Doesn't seem very wise, but who am I? I'm only the driver. So I followed the directions, got on the Long Island Expressway heading west. Then traffic starts to build up. You know, there was no traffic heading north. No traffic heading north towards the Whitestone Bridge or the Throg's Neck Bridge. It was beautiful. And out of blind faith, I got off that road and got on the expressway heading west, where all of a sudden traffic started to build up. And in fact, Waze even cut in and said, hey, traffic's starting to build up. Here's a better route. Thanks, Waze. Covering up for your own mistake there. Okay, so now Waze wanted me to get onto the BQE. Three letters you don't want to hear when it's approaching 4 p.m. Yeah, BQE. You want me to get on the BQE now? What are you thinking now? We're going to go all the way to Staten Island and take the Verrazano Bridge and pay, what, the $50 toll, whatever that thing is these days? What's the plan here? So I usually don't do this because I'm a nut about spoilers. I don't like to know how things are going to end. Okay, I don't read ahead in books. I don't see how things are going on TV shows, and I don't like to know the exact route that Waze has planned for me. I like to be surprised, and I was surprised. But this time, I decided I was going to hit a couple of buttons and see just what it had in mind, and what I saw. I'm sorry. It's too soon. I'm still dealing with it. What I saw was so disturbing and stunning. Excuse me a second. What that insane? There's words I want to use, but I can't use. What that insane GPS program had me doing was going over the Williamsburg Bridge into Lower Manhattan at hours approaching rush hour, all right, and cutting through Lower Manhattan and getting into the Holland Tunnel. The Holland Tunnel. I mean, the little children know you don't take the Holland Tunnel anywhere near daylight hours. It's always going to result in tears. It never works out. Go down there sometime. Go down there and look. Look at the people who have been parked in lines all day long. Look at the people who have raised families in their cars while they're waiting to get into that damn tunnel, which apparently only has half a lane or something and 60 lanes trying to get into it. This is the road you want me to take? What in God's name is wrong with you? And sure enough, the arrival time kept changing. Instead of a quarter after the hour, well, now it was 35 minutes past the hour. And by every single minute that went by, another minute was added. So now we're looking at a situation where Kyle could very easily miss his flight, even though we had plenty of time initially and we were following the directions. So we actually had to look into, okay, what happens if you miss this flight? Because, you know, sometimes that happens. I don't usually like to miss things. And we're usually quite good at keeping schedules. All that travel overseas trains you for that. But there was nothing we could do at this point. You know, when you find yourself being edged onto the Williamsburg Bridge, you can't turn around. You know, even with that new Kosciuszko Bridge, or half a bridge that they have right now, it's still backed up. There's still a lot of cars. And we found ourselves in Lower Manhattan in exactly the situation that I had feared, that I had dreaded, knowing that we're going to get stuck in pre-rush hour traffic, which is almost worse than rush hour traffic, because the people in pre-rush hour traffic are more aggressive because they're trying to beat the rush hour traffic. You know, so they have something to prove, and they don't care. And yeah, those are our companions trying to shoehorn into that tunnel. It was a very frustrating experience, and when we finally got into the tunnel, it didn't really improve. You know, okay, we're in the tunnel now, but we're still going 10 miles an hour at best, and the clock is ticking. So, you know, eventually we made our way into Jersey, and it was a while before things started to open up, but when things did open up, we were able to speed across the Pulaski Skyway, which is always a good thing to do, and head towards the airport at lightning speed, and literally dropped him off, I think, a half hour before departure, and the plane was supposed to leave 10 minutes early. So it was a real, you know, OJ sprint down the airport corridors there for Kyle. He made the flight. He made the flight. This was probably the most hectic, down to the wire connection I think we've ever made, or at least one of us has ever made. So he got on his flight, and the investigation began after that as to just what in God's name had happened. And In the interest of full disclosure, I have to say that Waze did absolutely nothing wrong. And the reason I can reach that shocking conclusion, yes, the road was wide open to the Whitestone, to the Throg's Neck. We would have made tremendous time. We would have avoided all the traffic had we only taken those bridges. At some point, I had gotten annoyed with Waze in the past because it kept directing me onto toll roads, and I had checked the box that said avoid toll roads. So if you look at its actions, everything that it did was to get us to not pay a toll. So as soon as we were approaching the Whitestone Bridge, it said, whoa, don't go that way. Go this way instead. Take to Williamsburg. There's no toll there. Yeah, lots of traffic, but no toll. That's what you said. It only did what I asked it to do. And that's what computers do. That's what home assistants do. That's what certain literal-minded people do. And that's what Waze did. It got us there. Boy, was it a... It was an adventure, but it sure got us there. And we learned an awful lot about choices and checkboxes and things like that. All right, so Kyle's in Seattle right now. He's going to be checking in just a little bit. Actually, he's in a car right now in traffic in Seattle. There's some kind of symmetry to that. And he'll be back next week, so don't panic. But we have a lot going on. Oh, my God, we have a lot going on in the world. I don't even know where to begin. I don't know if I can begin. I mean, the whole world, you know, handbasket, all that. Just turn on your TV. Just listen to your radio. Well, listen to me. You'll hear all about it. Pick a region. Syria? Okay, you want Syria? Wow. So you had a chemical weapons attack on civilians. Horrible thing. And Russia denies it. Syria denies it. The pictures don't deny it. The video kind of speaks for itself. And everyone is wondering, what will the United States do? Because we're the ones that always do something about these things. And shortly after that attack happened, there was a missile attack on Syria. And everyone said, wow, look at that. The U.S. is doing, but the U.S. threw up its hand and said, nope, not us. We weren't doing that. Swear to God, it wasn't us. And they moved on to the next likely candidate, Israel. Yeah, Israel, just out of the blue, you know what? We're going to bomb Syria now. Why not? Everyone else is involved here. You know, Turkey, Iran, Russia, United States. We haven't launched missiles. All we're doing is shooting Palestinians on the border. That's no fun. Let's do something big and launch a missile. So now the suspicion is, even though they have yet to admit it, because they don't admit things, that Israel is bombing Syria too. I mean, how do people get through the day over there? You don't know where it's going to come from next. No matter what hell we go through in our daily lives or in our political system, you can't even imagine what life is like over there. It's absolutely insane. Anyway, we... please leave the studio, please.
Just look at that.
Okay, we have intruders in the studio. Okay. Okay, bye-bye. I hate it when people sneak up behind you in a radio studio. We really need to put a lock on that door. Okay, so, where was I? Totally threw my train of thought there. Thanks a lot. Syria. So that's what's going on. But, you know, that's only one part of the world. That's only one part of the world. All kinds of things are happening in other parts of the world. We can focus on what's happening in this part of the world, you know, which is right here in the good old USA, where Trump's lawyers... offices and hotel rooms and home were raided by the FBI yesterday. I mean, that is something. That is huge. And what people are talking about now is what Trump is going to do next. Is he going to fire Robert Mueller? And if he does, what kind of effect will that have on the future of his presidency? I mean, this is just unbelievable territory that we're venturing into. But it's something that that we're all keeping an eye on. And they say if he fires Mueller or Rosenstein, which leads to firing Mueller, that it could be the end of his presidency. So there's a part of me that says, yeah, fire him. Go ahead, fire him. Because that finally will unleash the rage and the fury that we have been so long overdue for the chaos that that has ensued in the last year and change. So something is going to happen very soon. Something is going to happen probably in the next day or so involving the United States and Syria, or the United States political system, the future of the presidency, the future of this country. And it's just a very interesting time to be paying attention. So I hope people pay attention. These are definitely historic times. Oh, and Mark Zuckerberg testified before Congress today, too. But you know what? I just don't have time for that. Something else that has been going on a more local note. This is a project we've been involved in. Kyle and I have been involved in for the last a couple of years. And it's coming to a conclusion. Pretty soon, it's coming to a conclusion. And that is the digitizing, the archiving of all the CDs that this radio station has had over the years. We had no room for it in our new studios that we moved to, so the only solution was we have to digitize this somehow. And for the last couple of years, we've been involved with robots and all kinds of technology, getting information about all the tracks. Something like 70,000 CDs, I think. And occasionally, you know, we test these things to make sure that they're encoding properly. We check short tracks to make sure that it's not a snippet of something that got corrupted. And sometimes, you know, we find things, you know, when people step on CDs, it tends to affect the sound quality. And sometimes, you know, we notice, yeah, this isn't quite right, and we have to delete it. But sometimes we get real treasures, things that are just unbelievable. And this is one. And if I had hit the right button, he would have heard it. This is one.
The cricket frog, Acris grillus dorsalis, is the smallest species in the chorus.
Imagine that. We have a CD, for some reason, we have a CD of sounds of North American frogs. It's just one after another.
Tree frog voices are very different in quality from those of the pig frog, Ranagrillo, which has internal vocal sacs.
I mean, there are must probably 100 tracks on here, every single kind of frog that you can find in North America. But the best part is this guy's voice. I'm sorry, there's just something about it that it intrigues me. In fact, I found this. I found reviews of this CD. Apparently, it's got a cult following.
Hey, John, are you sleeping?
Wake up, John, come on through.
John.
Shh, I think he's sleeping. I'll go check.
Oh, boy.
John, are you sleeping? Wake up, John, it's morning.
Okay, you know, this is a different CD. I was hoping this wouldn't happen.
Frère Jacques. Jacques, frère Jacques.
Yeah. You want to shut up? Okay. Wow. Okay. There's also another CD that is French lessons in the most annoying fashion you could possibly imagine. Getting back to the frogs, please. This is more important. Does it go any lower? All right. I really can't say whether I'm more fascinated by the frogs or by this guy named Bogard. If you want to hear some strange animal vocalizations, it's hard to beat bird calls, but there is no bird set with Bogard. That's the guy's name. He should have had a chance to read books onto audio cassettes or do voiceovers. In fact, I would be very happy if Bogard took over this audio here somewhere. Could he step in, please?
A somewhat smaller frog with paired vocal sacs that appear as balloon-like protuberances on each side of the throat is a leopard frog, Ranipipiens. This is its mating call.
Yeah. Wow. This person writes, I would have dreaded having him as a science teacher because his strangely appealing, though gravelly voice would have lulled me to sleep. It's so true. I think we've all had science teachers like this. But okay, to explain the other one, because I feel I should. There was also another CD that we found called A Universe of Song. Apparently, it's a series designed to teach you how to speak French.
My mother told me that is the French name for a lark.
Yes, this song is about all the different parts of the songbird.
Tell me, what is head in French?
Une tête.
Beak.
Un bec.
Eyes.
Les yeux.
Wings.
Les ailes.
Feet.
Les pieds.
Yeah, you know, and it goes on like that. there are a whole bunch of tracks of these annoying kids that are basically trying to teach. I guess they're trying to teach themselves French or something, and it's it very quickly makes you want to become violent in some way. Yeah.
Let's make it a little harder.
God!
And say some words together like. Six white horses.
Six chevaux blancs.
Red pajamas.
Six pyjamas rouges.
A great big fire.
Un grand feu.
A much smaller
when
toad,
I was little,
the
I used to sleep with my grandmother sometimes, too.
Has a totally different voice consisting of a short, high-pitched whistle.
So you see how gravelly-voiced science teachers and frogs somehow become a lot more appealing. Okay, so that's what we've been doing. Locally, we've been encoding CDs like crazy, and you know, sometimes you find really good music, sometimes you find really strange things. There's so much in our library, and I hope that in the months and years ahead that we're able to bring you so much more because of this, because of the fact that we're able to access it now. Otherwise, you know, it would have been stored away someplace in a vault or eventually decaying into nothingness. Fortunately, here at WUSB, we care about these things, and that's why it's important to support us. We're in the middle of a fund drive. Please give us a call, 631-632-6901. Pledge whatever you can afford. Keep this place on the air. Keep us going, and we will give back in so many ways in future years through future programs and things like that. So, we have not yet heard from Kyle. I was expecting to call him about now, so we're going to wait to hear from his phone, I guess, when he finishes driving in out there in Seattle. In the meantime, let's check the news, make sure that Trump has not yet been impeached or that revolution has not already begun. No, not yet. But keep an eye on the news and what's going on in the world, because things are rapidly changing, and we don't know where it's going to go from this point. Okay, this is a story that I found really, really interesting, and it led to all kinds of revelations that I was completely unaware of. Utah is passing a law, get this, legalizing so-called free-range parenting groups. Or free-range parenting, I'm sorry, groups in states from New York to Texas are pushing for similar steps. Now, what is this free-range parenting? It basically, it's a concept that allows kids the freedom to do things alone, like explore a playground or ride a bike to school. And the viewpoint is that it makes them healthier and happier and more resilient. Yeah, this is a thing. You know, that's how I grew up. That's how so many people grew up. Yeah, you could ride your bike to school. You could go to a park by yourself. You could do all kinds of things. And now, apparently, in this age where we are so concerned and so paranoid about what if and all the evils of the world, that this kind of thing is seen as a threat. Wow. I was just blown away by hearing about this, that it's considered controversial to let your kid go to a park or to let your kid ride his bike or her bike to school or just be out on their own. You know, kids can ride the subway on their own. Kids can ride buses on their own. I've known about this. But apparently, if that kind of thing happens and somebody takes note of it, as a parent, you can get in trouble and be accused of neglect because kids have to be watched 24 hours a day and protected from everything. And that simply makes them so much more susceptible to control, constant control, and constant fear, which is the main ingredient of control. And then you have metal detectors everywhere. You've got cops everywhere. You've got suspicion all over the place. And that is basically how we wind up living. It's not healthy. Not healthy at all. Okay, we've heard from Kyle. I'm going to attempt to dial the number on the air, but not if we hear tones, because we don't want to give out the number. So let's see. We pick up this phone there. We can't do that? Okay, can we do it that way? No, okay. So I have to pick up the phone this way. And then I'll just assume that the number is being dialed, even though I can't hear a thing. Okay, I've never done this before. Never too old to learn. Okay, and then we hit this button. No, it doesn't work. Okay. I guess I have to wait for it to pick up, and then I hit the button. Okay, then I hang the phone up, and then I pick up, and Kyle should be there. Kyle, are you there? Uh-oh. Sounded like somebody hung up. Kyle, are you there? Maybe now. Is anybody there? Okay. What happened? Well, we can learn from this. Let's try. It's a bizarre system we have here. Apparently, I can't dial on the air. I have to pick up the receiver, which is hard to do when you're on the air, and then dial the number. And I can't hear the tone, so I don't know if pressing the button is working. So... okay, and then I have to put the on-air button. I have to press the on-air button, but that doesn't work until somebody picks up. And then by the time they pick up, they don't hear me. So then they hang up in frustration. I think that's what's happening. Okay. This is not designed for doing this on the air. Okay, I don't know how to do this. This is really kind of difficult. The light is flashing blue and green. You know what? I'm going to play a public service announcement and try to do this off air. I think that's the way that that you're supposed to do it. Hopefully by the time we come back, we'll be a bit more coordinated. Stand by.
You know, honey, I think I deserve some kind of reward.
Here, have a pickle.
Thanks. After all, I did find us the perfect house.
Have another pickle.
Thank you.
But remember, then I found out how much our house was going to cost.
Yeah, but then I found us the perfect mortgage. Got any more of these?
Sure, help yourself. But then I found out our perfect house had radon. The stuff you can't see, smell, or taste. And it's radioactive. And it's the second leading cause of lung cancer. Some dream house.
Yeah.
I need two pickles.
True. But then I found a phone.
Shut up. I'm sorry. Those people are so annoying, and I've wanted to say that for a long time, and that wasn't an official PSA anyway, so I can do that. Kyle, are you there? Why is he not there? I don't understand. I'm pressing the right buttons. I guess I have to press a button again. Is that, Kyle, are you there now? Is anyone there? I hear sound. Kyle, are you there? Oh, wait. I know. You can't hear me because I didn't press that button. Can you hear me now? No? That's still not working. Okay, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know why this isn't working. It should be working. I've got the phone up. I've got the other button pressed. I didn't press it on my microphone. There we go. Now, Kyle, can you hear me now?
I'm you.
Sorry.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Forgive me, everybody. This is the first time I did this.
It's entirely my fault. Hang up. I'm sorry.
Okay, you hung up the first time, so that threw me.
No, Yeah.
But this time I didn't press. I pressed the button on your channel, which I shouldn't do. I should have pressed the button on my channel, so you could hear yourself, but you couldn't hear me.
I'm so glad that you were able to go, and I want everybody to recognize that was a very complicated thing that you did. It's basically like making your fingers into like a spaghetti knot and then, trying to sort it all out. But I heard you were doing a show on WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM.
Trying to.
And I just was hoping I could maybe like say hi.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you're here, and you know, the importance of your being here as kind of a barrier has never been more important than today. So we're looking forward to you coming back next week to keep the mobs at bay.
And I have adventures and stories.
Yeah, well, tell us the adventures and stories, please. I already told the adventure of getting to the airport. I already told that story, so you can't tell that one.
Well, it was harrowing. Probably by the choice of airports and a confluence of things that maybe we could have done differently, but it was really brilliant. I was so happy to have made it just in the nick of time. Really impressed with I flew out of. Can I say it?
I already told the story, so anything you're saying is probably repeating.
Yeah, I just don't want to admit it. I mean, really, it's just me hearing it myself. I left from New Jersey, and there it is.
We already knew that, Kyle. We already knew everything about it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I didn't catch when you told that. I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but the long and the short of it is, I left town, and I'm in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes, we know that too. You know, I've revealed everything already.
What don't you know?
When you're not here for 40 minutes, I've got to kill time somehow. So I pretty much revealed everything.
Okay.
I didn't say where you went. All right. How about that? You went someplace before you went to Seattle.
Remember that? Then I guess I'll tell that story since everybody knows everything else about me. God, you know, you really can't keep a secret. You may have a little discussion about this.
I tried.
Well, just on that note, I went to a really interesting event, and it was taking place in the state of Colorado. And this is a conference. I went to a conference, but I just wanted to stop through there. And Colorado, as people know, is just like my home state of Washington State, with changes to attitudes and laws around cannabis use. So they have a really interesting economy around this on the recreational side, and thus there's a lot of interest in business and markets that grow up around these things, whether it's the infrastructure or products and things like medicines or textiles even. So the conference was the Northern Colorado Hemp Expo, and it is an industry event that's all about hemp and hemp products. And if you'll recall, there's been some stories about, of all people, Mitch McConnell supporting the legalization of hemp as a commodity, and in removing it from the scheduling system, you know, considering the entirety of the plant to be a Schedule I substance, which we all know it is not. There's fantastic research going on with the non-psychoactive chemical CBD and tremendous nutritional benefits and so on and so forth. So I went to check it out.
And what was it like? What kinds of things did you do?
Amazing. It was a very, very positive experience. Lots of very excited people, thrilled to share their knowledge, share what they're doing with the hemp plant, other than this sort of mainstream thing that we're hearing so much about, the sort of recreational side. This is everything else, you know? There's so much more. It's not just, you know, a drug, as it's often demonized. There's really simple things like oils and, like I said, food supplements, but also really high-tech stuff like bioplastics and amazing new textiles. I was looking at T-shirts and you know, different materials. They can make all kinds of different cloths and fabrics. You know, you could essentially make most anything from this incredible plant. But the sort of bittersweet part is that it's really never been something our let me correct that. For a long time, it hasn't been something our country does at scale. We've basically criminalized it such that there are no longer hemp mills. There used to be many hemp mills in the U.S., and this is a community that's trying to bring that back, kind of right alongside the recreational movement. But, you know, it needs that legal push federally and a lot of understanding and correcting, I think, some of the misunderstandings about it and its use and cultivation mainly. I'm really excited about that because I think that recreational side was often hyped too much. And you know, the emphasis on like CBDs and medicinal stuff is, I think, also too much in taking away only but the sort of useful and marketable properties of a plant that has many uses. So there's extremes to this, and I'm very much interested in just freeing it as a plant and allowing all the innovation and interesting products, especially because it can be used as a carbon sink and it can be grown sustainably and with, you know, a lot less need for pesticides and other inputs and so on.
What kinds of people came to this thing?
Oh, wow. A lot of older people. This two-day event had sort of a summit the first day, which was basically like state of the industry. What's going on with FDA? What's going on with, you know, food products or pharmaceuticals? A lot of hype around extracting CBD, which is this medicinal thing that's shown to help treat people for a variety of conditions. So everybody kind of catches up. And then the next day was a farm and agriculture thing. So it's basically anybody, you know, who's in the processing or the growing side, you know, and you just meet, there were, I think, a couple projects. Winona LaDuc spoke. She was actually a Green Party candidate for president a while ago. She's representing tribal growers and her farm out in, I believe, Minnesota.
Yeah, northern Minnesota. And yeah, she was vice president. She was vice president, vice presidential candidate for Ralph Nader in 2000.
Yeah. So a lot of exciting stuff with indigenous groups. And the really interesting thing with her is her group is also fighting a pipeline. So they're fighting for growing in their local communities and, you know, feeding goats or whatever it is, you know, to keep the whole cycle of you know, multiple varieties of corn, you know, not just hemp, but just the whole process of local food and growing. She's trying to empower and, like, care for her community, but also keep these sort of encroaching interests out of it, which I thought was really interesting. There was another sort of consultant and real leader I forget the name. I could look it up, but he was doing some projects here in Washington with the Colville Indian Reservation. So that's really exciting. A lot of Native Americans tribes have basically, you know, blessed, have embraced and are blessing these sort of investments and literally going out in the fields and blessing the crops. Although there are some interesting caveats with the Washington one, because apparently they can't use certain genetics and, you know, it was unavailable, you know, and so their first attempts, you know, had some hiccups and stuff like that, because again, on the industrial side, there's these like overbearing policies of sort of relegating what types of seed and varieties, and so you can't source local seed, I guess, and that was something that they were encountering as a difficulty. So a lot of problem solving, a lot of new entrants into hemp cultivation, a lot of people who've been doing it for many years. I met a guy, I think he was from Texas, or I want to say New Mexico. No, he was, I'm forgetting exactly. He was just standing next to me. He was with his wife and kind of an older gentleman. I asked him, you know, he kind of struck up a conversation with me, and it turns out this guy basically just leases land and allows people to cultivate, you know, on his property. But just people who want to get involved and who are inspired about this, this emerging commodity, if it's, you know, changed in the federal sense, it really could be something. And so the passion, as you can hear, I mean, I'm really excited about it, and there was just a great fervor of excitement and activity. There were dogs there running around, tons of dogs, and a lot of kids. So apparently, you know, it's got the sort of family approval in that sense.
In eastern North America, the single notes of the territoriality call of individual green frogs can be heard throughout the summer. These sounds were issuing from a ditch near Orange Springs, Florida.
I'm sorry, Kyle. We've had a string of people wandering in here. Yeah, that's Bogart. Don't be. He's just preaching about frogs.
Sounds good.
Yeah, no, we have a wide variety of topics tonight, but I think yours is the most interesting as far as what you experienced.
Thanks for letting me share. I just, you know, it was a interesting diversion and kind of neat to be around, especially with the timing of it and so much possibility and innovation at a time when I think, you know, it could be a really... a good avenue for a lot of our problems. As many people said over the weekend, it's not the only solution. I think Winona LaDuke said this, not the only solution, but it's a big part of the solution for a lot of communities.
Now, can you tell us something about what's been going on in Seattle in the few minutes we have left?
Oh, man. You know, I got to say one thing. I don't want to talk about guns, but I've seen a lot of guns. And
what in the streets of Seattle?
Two pistols since I've been here.
Wait. How? Where? People just walking around with pistols now?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people. You know, but, and this is the kind of interesting thing. You know, obviously we've talked about how we feel about this. I personally, you know, don't. I'm not as interested as I think other people I know. But to have that conversation, you know, you gotta sort of be able to come around it, and I find people who have guns always want to show you their guns, and you kind of can't stop it. And I had some moments like that just with people I know, people that are really, really good friends of mine, and so on. And I've just kind of noticed that it's a little crazy. I sent you some pictures of a gas station that had a sign that said warning protected by, and just had a pistol, you know.
Great.
Yeah, so, you know, but I've had some good, as I said, conversations with people who also don't really participate in that, and the people that were, you know, wielding these things and I was discussing this with, I found I had some interesting conversations. I got a little agreement about the NRA being out of control.
Okay, but you know what? You can't get into a really passionate argument with people once they've shown you their guns. You know what I mean?
No, it sets up that power. that power thing, and it does leave you kind of in this thing where you're like backing down and like, oh no, I don't want to bring it up. You know how I feel. You know, you get painted as like, oh, you know, I know how you feel, and you know, it kind of goes to politics and, you know, geopolitics, and I don't know. I don't like getting out on those tangents too much, but I will say, you know, how I feel about it. And I really, you know, like, I think they're, you know, none of the people that I was interacting with were actual NRA members and didn't really believe the organization was that important.
Did the topic of AR-15s or that kind of weapon come up?
Yeah, actually, like, all the people I talked to had gun safes, and, you know, one, you know, some of them had two, which is, I got another one, you know? So what does that mean? And, you know, is this really the climate? Are we going to get, like, a new gun for every year Trump is in office? Is it, like, whether you're a supporter or not, you have to continually arm as we, you know, progressively, you know, go through this craziness? I'm not sure.
I mean, are they prepared for are they going to act against Trump or something? Is this in preparation for dealing with all
I'm
the tyranny,
sure.
Or is it just for their own self gratification?
I think all of the above, and it just seems to be an extension of the kind of tension we're creating. You know, it's like the mentality of the good guy or the gun bad guy thing, you know, where, oh, well, you know, everybody's going to be wielding, so I need to be able, you know, or if something collapses, I need to be able to see. It's all this me stuff, and it's very difficult to have a discussion, but to just sum it up, the guns themselves that I lost my train of thought. I can't even put it all into words. But
is somebody holding a gun on you right now?
No.
Okay,
no,
good.
I'm not on the at gunpoint.
I don't know what's going on out there. It just sounds crazy.
But no, going back to the AR-15 thing, it was the one gun that was not in a safe. Okay, it was in like a, you know, just like a little a nylon bag. Outside of the safe.
Wait, an AR-15?
So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then it was, you know, hey, oh, did you see this? And that's when I stopped the conversation. I said, you know what? I have.
Wow.
I have seen that. I know what that is. Leave it in the bag.
Because it's nice and safe inside a bag. Listen, Kyle,
yeah.
I want to continue this conversation. Let's continue it next week, but we're out of time now. Please stay safe and try to keep a level of sanity while you're out there, even if it's not around you.
On your definition, I would say quite safe, but it's something I wanted to bring up because it seems ubiquitous. It's all around, and I mean, I've said a bazillion. You know, we've talked at length about this, but you know, when I come back here, I'm reminded of it, and I can't not mention it.
All right, Kyle, great hearing your voice, and safe travels. We will see you back here next week. And for everybody else, I want to invite you to call us, 631-632-6901, and pledge your support to the radio station to keep us going, and also write to us, otw@2600.com. Have a good night, Kyle.
So long.
And Bogart, you want to lead us out of here?
There are similar north-to-south trends in the pitch of the voice of the eastern gray tree frog, Hyla versicolor. Near Englewood, New Jersey, its mating call is a musical trill.
Downfall picks up locomotion. Now you gotta give the people something good to read on a Sunday.
Now the leader's wife took a government car. In the dark to meet a minister. The leader never leaves his door ajar. Swings the whip from the Boer War.
The people must have something good to read on a Sunday.
He wore a leather mask for his dinner guest. Totally nude and with deep respect. Proposed a toast to the bullets he gets. The feeling of power and the thought of sex.
The people must have something good to read on a Sunday.
Now the girl let the fat man touch her. Vodka fume and the feel of a vulture. Driver waited in the embassy car. Fat man trapped his head for catcher. The girl let the thin man touch her. Mixing question, drunk and laughter. Ministry car, wait a minute. Minister knows his own affair.
The people must have something good to read on a Sunday.
WUSB Stony Brook Finn's Revolution. Tonight we have, in just a few moments, we have Miss Serena Yost talking about her new release. Then at 8 p.m. we have the spectacular Eleanor Dubinsky playing live. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Yeah, some great new music from Serena Yost right here on WUSB Stony Brook. And we're going to be speaking to Serena in about 10 minutes or so. Meanwhile, we're going to listen to some new stuff from her. Really gorgeous cellist, songwriter, singer, arranger. And this is called The Cut right here. WUSB Stony Brook, Serena Yost. Yeah, brand new by Serena Yost, Up to the Sky is the name of the new record. That was The Cut. And we're going to hear one more tune from Serena before we speak to her. And her new record is just gorgeous. As I said, Up to the Sky, and cellist, songwriter, singer, and just amazing. So in just a few moments, Serena Yost live with us right here on WUSB Stony Brook.
Oh, 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 oh.